Well, hello, folks. It is 31 degrees here in the Twin Cities. It feels kind of nice. But as you just heard from Sloan Martin, there is snow in the forecast. So keep it here at WCCO Radio, WCCO.com, because it's changing. I'll be live at 6 a.m. tomorrow and 10:30 a.m. with Kylie Burse, who I'm sure will have the complete forecast on what is going on, because it does sound like we are going to get hit again. But the good news is we're coming out of it. I mean, at least when I drove here tonight at 6 o'clock, it was still a little bit light out. So we're gaining light a little bit every single day. Positive news. So that's good to know. Well, later this half hour, we're going to chat with Sloan about some of the stories she's covered this week and some of the stories I've covered this week as we both made our rounds. And then we're going to talk at 6:35 with Dr. Allison Galdis. She's an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and Internal Medicine at the University of Minnesota Medical School. This is about the flu, and it is still really, really serious. I was at an event that was supposed to be, and it was a very kind of happy event that, you know, a team that my daughter plays on is going to get to go to the state tournament. And half the conversation with the parents was just about the flu and how to avoid it and what to wipe down and what do you do when you get it and do you go right in. And anyway, we're going to get the lowdown on that and why exactly this has been, you know, such a difficult season. Also in the 7 o'clock hour, and this is really cool, we're going to join. We'll be joined by Mark Jones, who's the managing director of the United States Olympic Committee. And he's going to join us actually from Korea to talk about how the U.S. team is doing. And there's been kind of some articles basically perhaps not bashing, but I would say criticizing or pointing out that the United States team, which had, I guess, the largest delegation of any country to go to South Korea, has had a lot of disappointments. Now, the games are not over, but I guess there was a big defeat in hockey, and there was, you know, an allegation by the U.S. coach that the Russians were trying to run up the score. Well, it's the Russians. What do we expect? But anyway, we'll talk to him about that. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, how can you predict there are going to be upsets? I mean, the woman who beat Lindsey Vonn last night in the Super G, did you hear about this? She was a professional snowboarder who was using used skis or secondhand skis.
Oh, no. She wasn't a professional. She is.
Or she is, excuse me. She snowboards and she skis.
Yes,
but her main sport was snowboarding.
Yes. Well, she is going to participate in the
right.
giant slalom snowboarding event later this coming week.
Right.
So I heard about this last night. I was fascinated by this story. And apparently she does ski sort of on her off days from snowboarding.
Right.
But she wasn't a medal contender. She wasn't someone
right.
who was really going to challenge anyone for a medal. And the defending champion had gone maybe 10 skiers before her and put down the time that everybody thought, oh, this is the winning time. She's the defending gold medalist. She's got it. There's no other person after her that's going to
right.
Challenge her. And little did we know that Esther Ledesca.
I think I was just trying to get the right pronoun. I think you nailed it. Esther Ledesca.
I've been hearing it all day and all last night. But Esther Ledesca from, I believe, Slovakia. Was the champion. She ran the race. She ran it fearlessly from what you hear from the commentary. And I listened to the NBC commentary after the fact. The best thing was her reaction.
Right, because she was like looking up there going, what?
She was in a daze for about 5 seconds. She's just looking straight forward. And then she sort of looks in the direction of the camera just with this look of utter shock on her face.
Right.
It was
right.
incredible.
Right, right. I mean, she really did look as if is that a mistake? And then I saw her quoted as saying that she was wondering if they were going to add a few seconds onto her time.
Yeah,
these times are so close. That
right. Well, she won by 1/100th of a second, which is the
close.
Smallest yeah. margin you can win by in these events. They only time them out by hundredths of seconds. And so I believe she was her saying.
Czech, I think, is what they're saying.
Czech Republic. And she was quoted as saying, how did that happen?
Yeah.
That's what she said. That's what she asked. It's amazing.
That is pretty amazing. But anyway, so there are stories like that that you have to love no matter if, you know, and who doesn't want to root for Lindsey Vonn? I mean, here's this veteran. She's been through these horrific crashes. In that promo for the Olympics, they show her knee. And it's just, oh my gosh, you know, she's, you know, a beautiful woman, such a fabulous athlete, but the knee looks like it's 130 years old. And, you know, I guess she said she made one mistake. And that's what's so tough about these sports is it's one mistake, it's seconds. And these people work so hard. You know, for some of these figure skaters especially, you know that the mind is playing tricks on them. And it's difficult.
It's interesting, the commercial. Have you seen her commercial for Bounty?
Yes, paper towel.
It's interesting that you have someone with so many catastrophic knee injuries, and they put her on a slant.
Yeah.
Where her ankles are sort of at risk. I'm like, is that the smartest idea to do that?
Well, she's obviously an extraordinary athlete. I think she still has one more event that she can go after.
Two more.
She will
do the downhill, and I believe she'll do the super combined. It's either alpine or super combined later in the week.
Right. But it's you know, obviously another challenge too with the Olympics is just the times, because it's 10 o'clock in the morning there, I believe.
Actually,
tomorrow it's
actually, to be honest, I think this Olympics has done NBC, and I know a lot of people have been panning NBC's coverage. I think they've done as good of a job as you can, because there are events that they are showing live in prime time, whereas you see this in Europe. Or if you're going.
Well, that's because NBC paid all the money. So the figure skaters are skating at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And there's nobody in the stands for some of the preliminary aspects of that team competition.
But
so
you got to hand it to NBC, because otherwise this would be all tape delayed and everybody would be having their heads.
Right. Well, I think they did that for the figure skating. I think it's called also Money Talks. But anyway, listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by WCCO Radio's Sloan Martin to talk about some of the stories that she covered this week.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's 6:17 on a Saturday evening. Wow, we're up to 35 degrees and snow is still coming. I know you've had that in your forecast, Sloan, but stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah, they're thinking it's also going to be kind of this wintry mix. Well, it might be ice accumulation, too. It just sounds kind of ugly all around, I think.
Right. It's the ice. I mean, I love the snow, but and as somebody, my husband had a bad accident on the ice, just, you know, trying to snowblow, and really took out his knee in mid-January. And it's just, it's really, 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 you've got to be so careful, folks. And no matter what age you are, I mean, you really do.
I am originally from Southern California, so I didn't grow up with snow and ice, and I still am extremely careful. Like, I can't walk on ice, an ice rink, or anything, so I'm totally in his category.
Absolutely. All right, well, you had an interesting story that you covered, the business of romance.
Yeah, that was kind of a theme for this week with Valentine's Day on Wednesday. And we had our U of M Carlson School quarterly report, and that was what they were talking about. And really the question was, why do we spend so much money on this holiday as Americans? And they put the ballpark, the Carlson folks, at around $5 billion on jewelry alone. The entire holiday is upwards of $15, $16 billion. So that's your cards, that's your candy, that's your restaurants. That's a lot.
Right.
That really adds up. But they were kind of focusing mostly on the conversation around jewelry. And it is such an economics-related question. Why do you spend so much money on something you don't need?
Right.
Well, the answer is just the emotional connection.
Right.
And why do we do that? Why do we make the decisions that we do? And that's what it rests on, is just emotion.
Well, and I also think that probably still it's a big day to get engaged. I think maybe people put down the money for the ring.
Yes, they had a co-owner from a jewelry store on, and she actually said that Christmas was the bigger time to get engaged and even the bigger time to get jewelry, which I thought was kind of surprising.
Yeah.
And she seemed to think that it was kind of tapering off for Valentine's Day a little bit. Maybe people think it's a little cliched these days. I don't know if that's the deal, but obviously it's still a huge and major holiday when it comes to buying jewelry.
Right.
And she talked about how in the store, Wicks and Jewelers is store that
it was. A wonderful store, yes.
Yeah, so they talked about how they don't make it any kind of like transactional affair. It's about how is this person going to feel when they put on this jewelry? And really talking about, again, the emotion of it. And I'm not someone who regularly spends money that way. So it was interesting to hear the perspective about what goes into the decision, both buying and selling something
like
that.
Right. Well, you're saying I sometimes pick up a necklace at Target, you know, which I think
makes
is great.
Me feel good. Yeah.
You know, which is great faux jewelry, but Wixen obviously beautiful, but, you know, obviously for people who have money or else if they're sort of romancing somebody, I guess that's still a thing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. They talked about how this is something that creates memories. You're not going to remember, you know, a sweater that you got, flowers die, chocolate gets eaten.
But it's good.
It is. It is. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. You also went to covered a teacher's union event. And,
yes.
And they've got a proposal that I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, things are really ramping up right now. We've got the legislative session beginning on Tuesday. So things are going to be really active in the Capitol next week. And this is Education Minnesota. So they represent a lot of teachers. They are affiliated with the union, whether it's public schools, colleges. They represent a huge group of teachers and are kind of that vocal piece for them. And last legislative session, this was back in April, and this was a Republican-led initiative, and of course it is a Republican-controlled legislature. They wanted to change the structure of teacher licenses. They said, we're facing a shortage. We have people from out of state who can't really navigate this system. There's too many bureaucratic hurdles. How can we make this easier so people want to become teachers and not go through the rigmarole of what we have here in Minnesota? Now, these teachers from Education Minnesota said what they did was essentially lower the bar.
Right.
That your child might have a tier one teacher, which is the lowest number of credentials they need, basically. And you might not know it. And it wasn't that way before. It used to be just kind of a baseline that they had to meet. And yes, they said that the previous system did need tweaks, and an audit found the same thing. It was audited and said this needs to be readjusted. But they said that this lowers the bar. And there was this one teacher, I remember, Dennis Drawn, who's a social studies teacher in the District 196, Apple Valley, Eastview, or Apple Valley, Rosemont, and Eagan. And he's African-American. He said it was insulting to have them say, well, we want to have more minority teachers, but then essentially lower the bar. And he said that, you know, we noticed that, and that's not a great message to send. And they said that it's not so much a shortage, it's a retention problem. It's because of pay. It's because of lack of support. It's because of having to put their own funds into their own classrooms and not really reaping much of that back. So really calling for getting away from that tiered system that they recently put in and putting more attention on how teachers are treated every day. So it was an interesting discussion.
Yeah, we also saw sort of the end of the St. Paul teacher strike, and we're just beginning to get some of the details there. But one of the things they wanted, really, the pay, yes, that was on the table, was a 1% raise, which, yes, 1% is 1%, but really it was the support issues and for dealing with issues like English as a second language. And I was stunned to see in the St. Paul schools more than 120 languages are spoken, which is just, I just was...
That is mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing when you think, and I guess a lot of them might be dialects or whatever, but they have to deal with all of that, so...
And that was what they came to, is that when you have, you know, less preparation, when you could technically get your license by meeting this one benchmark as opposed to what it previously was at, that's going to hurt students, particularly immigrants, because sometimes when you don't have that kind of cultural literacy, you might just think some kid is not smart enough.
Right.
Really, they just don't understand the language and are just kind of sorting things out here.
Right. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens because the legislative session, you're absolutely right, starts on Tuesday. And one of the events I went to this week was a press conference with all the legislative leaders, and including the governor, the House Speaker, Senate Majority Leader, Senator Gazelka, the two minority leaders, Senator Bach and Representative Melissa Horton. And they all were saying, we really like each other.
They have a selfie to prove it, too.
Yeah, I know. They took and Senator or Representative Speaker Doubt took a selfie with himself and the governor. Super awkward, as my kids would say, awkward. It just was not the most relaxed looking picture. And certainly they really have the comments that those two have wielded towards each other over the past couple of years have been more than super awkward. I mean, there certainly is a lot of tension there. So it really is going to be interesting to see what they can possibly accomplish. One of the things where they did seem to be on the same page of all things was on the issue of sexual harassment in terms of having new standards at the legislature for training. And, you know, you work here, we all work here in this room, and we all have to go through this extensive training. In fact, now I'm just a note to self. I think I'm behind on one training that I've got to do. But we do a lot of training here in the area of sexual harassment. We do all these videos. You got to do it. Otherwise, you can't stay on. And they're talking about more training. But also, I thought it was really interesting that Representative Hortman basically said, hey, it's not just us here at the legislature that needs some improvement. We need to look at the laws for all of Minnesota so that all people in all workplaces are protected. And I thought that was interesting because there seems to be perhaps be a little maybe a consensus there, but it wasn't clear.
The executive branch came out with a report just a couple right. weeks ago, and it looked at each of the 23 agencies and how many complaints there were and kind of really addressed it. So I think it is encouraging to see the legislature try and do the same thing, especially because that was really where this originated in those publicized reports and those allegations that led to resignations and really kind of blowing up this whole conversation. But that is such an important aspect of it, too, is the people and the women who and victims who don't have that kind of power. If
right.
they are low-income people, right. if they are not known names or elected right. leaders, what is their recourse? And maybe taking a look at those laws would right. be able to help people who don't have that same kind of power.
And I do think more people are coming out. And I have spoken with the Representative Erin McQuaid, who's one of the representatives. She's a younger representative from Apple Valley. And she was one of those who came forward. And, you know, it's like anything. You start out new. You're sort of maybe you're younger. You're sort of at the bottom rung. And she was getting this, and she came forward. And I think more and more women probably will, and men as well, because men can be victims here as well. But there does seem to be some consensus for that. But on the issues of like teacher licensing and, you know, dealing with expanding, you know, early childhood education options and infrastructure, there's so many things and you wonder, how are they possibly going to get to do it?
Things left on such a bad note last
oh, I know.
Time, and it carried over. Can I call it the off-season?
Yes.
I'm going to call it the off-season. It carried over into the off-season, too, where just tension's really high.
Yes.
So I have the same questions as you. Is yeah, you can take an awkward selfie, but how is that going to translate to really trying to do things together?
Right. And there's also tensions between the governor and Senator Bach. You know, they're both DFLers, and then you've got Senator Gazelka, who's sort of in the middle, who's sort of in a very kind of soothing and I think might be the person to kind of bring something together if there's some kind of deal. But anyway, I just was there going, let's see what happens. And I don't want to, immediately dismiss any possibility of people working together, but it was a little tense. So, thank you so much. This was fun, and you're almost off.
I am indeed. But we'll check in next week.
Absolutely.
Too.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Sloan. All right. That was Sloan Martin from our WCCO newsroom. Great to chat with her and get her perspective on different stories that you cover. And it is kind of fun to just kind of talk and kind of get a reporter's perspective on what it was like to cover something and what was fun, what was good. Lately, I haven't been covering fun stuff. Maybe could I just like put in a request? Fun stuff? WCCO TV, assignment desk, fun stuff. I don't know. I get the yucky stuff. But that's all right. I can deal with yucky. All right, folks. Coming up in this half hour, we are going to talk with an expert about the flu. And it really is. It's tough. I notice we've got our wipes. Yes. Our sanitizing wipes right here. Oh, Jonathan's got his own. I've got my own. Anyway, it's something I don't think I've ever been as conscious as I have this time of year or this time or this particular season, because I think so many people I know, including people I've known for years who are very healthy, who never get sick, have gotten so sick. So we're going to get some insight into that. But break, and we want to give you some weather because there is a lot going on in the forecast. It is 6:35 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy, along with producer Jonathan Lowe, until 9 o'clock, talking the flu season. You've heard about it. I'm sure you probably know somebody who is sick, because it seems like an awful lot of people I know are sick, where I work, where my kids go to school. It's been a really tough season, and I've mentioned this on another show. I've had a few accidents in the family. Everybody's okay, but I actually have been in the emergency room a couple of times in the past month, and it was really startling to see people come in looking so ill and obviously with flu-like symptoms. Dr. Allison Galdis is an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and International Medicine at the University of Minnesota Medical School, and she is joining us now. Dr. Galdis, thank you so much. And am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you're right. Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Dr. Galdis, from where you sit at the University of Minnesota Medical School, what is your take on this flu season?
Well, certainly, as you alluded to, this has been a very challenging flu season, not only in Minnesota, but really across the country. We are seeing numbers that are rivaling those seen in 2009 when the H1N1 epidemic occurred. And these were seeing elevated numbers of patients visiting their healthcare providers, both in the outpatient clinic and in the emergency department. And unfortunately, we're seeing, you know, a large number of people becoming very ill, and some have unfortunately died due to this really somewhat unprecedented season.
All right. Now, let me ask you, is it just sort of more people, or are the people getting sicker, or is it both?
Yeah. So certainly there are more people this year. The statistics that are kept by the CDC look at numbers of persons who are hospitalized with confirmed influenza, and also persons who are visiting their outpatient clinics and complain of flu-like symptoms. And those numbers are as high as they've been for the last 15 years during which data has been kept. So certainly we're seeing high numbers of individuals with flu and flu-like symptoms. In terms of complications, you know, it's a little bit early to say how this year stacks up against others. Certainly with the high numbers of people with flu, there will be also high numbers of persons with complications. Those complications tend to lag behind the initial stages of the outbreak. So we're currently just over halfway through a typical flu season, which can be anywhere from 11 to the maximum of 20 weeks. So
we're only halfway through?
Well,
yikes.
some encouraging data this past week with numbers fortunately starting to level off. In previous weeks, it seems like the numbers of persons presenting to the hospital and having confirmed flu were growing week by week. Finally, now we're seeing that those numbers might be plateauing. So hopefully the duration of the flu season won't be towards that 20-week mark.
Wow.
But it's still a little bit early to say. But certainly some of the estimates with regards to complications will likely be more accurate later in the outbreak. Initially, this doesn't necessarily seem to be a more lethal flu virus, but it certainly is widespread, as I mentioned.
All right. And in terms of, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot written about the vaccine study out of Australia. I think said it was 10% effective. I've seen some suggestions that it's slightly higher than that. Studies in the U.S. maybe 30%. Then I've seen something that said basically it's more effective in children than it is in adults. Walk me through that. I mean, is that possible to have, a flu shot or a vaccine that's more effective in, you know, one demographic versus another? Or are we just weaker than kids, which is definitely true.
So the CDC released this week its interim analysis on vaccine effectiveness. And of course, we're not through the flu season yet, but these are some preliminary data that they have released. And the analysis is actually for the three subtypes of flu virus that circulate. There are two strains, influenza A and influenza B. And within the influenza A umbrella, there's the H1N1 strain that sort of gained notoriety during the 2009 season. And then also there's an H3N2 type of influenza A. And so a composite analysis of the vaccine against these three subtypes shows that by far the vaccine is least effective at preventing persons from getting influenza A, H3N2. The vaccine does a little bit better when it comes to influenza A, H1N1, and influenza B.
Okay.
And so, unfortunately, this year, as is the case in many and really most years, the H3N2 is the predominant circulating virus, and the vaccine appears to be least effective against that strain. Fortunately, though, there does seem to be more immunity in children. So that is, I guess, one silver lining, because children are so susceptible to influenza infection and susceptible to the complications that can arise from influenza infection. Certainly, as you alluded to, this is, you know, an interesting aspect of influenza vaccination. Why do some populations of individuals simply respond better and have less of a chance of flu infection after their vaccine? Probably, immunization in children is more immunogenic. They have young, robust immune systems. They also tend to have fewer accompanying chronic illnesses. Persons who have chronic illnesses frequently don't respond as well to influenza vaccine or other vaccines. So there are probably factors within these age groups that mediate how well they're responding to the vaccine.
Let me ask you this, because it was my experience in the emergency room. Granted, this was, not a pediatric hospital, so there weren't there were kids coming in, but it was the people who looked the most grave were people who I would put into maybe the age group of like maybe the 70s, even 80s. Is that just something that is anecdotal from my few hours in the emergency room, or is that are people who are older getting sicker?
That phenomenon is definitely playing out in the statistics that are being collected. So not only are elderly people, more susceptible to getting sick, they're also more susceptible to getting complications. So the biggest risk groups are persons who are age 2 and under, and who are age 65 to 70 and older. That's where the majority of complicated influenza requiring hospitalization, that's where those cases appear to be.
And are there any areas of the country that are worse? I mean, I was just chatting here, our producer, Jonathan Lowe, his mom has the flu down in Kansas City. I mean, are we here in the Twin Cities area worse or better, or are some areas really bad? And how about just, across the world? How do we kind of stack up?
Yeah, so it's hard to make, just because of the seasonal nature of flu. You alluded to initially that Australia has been through its flu season, and they also
because it's summer there, right?
Exactly, correct. And so, looking at the map, the statistical map of the U.S., it's probably good to be in Hawaii right now.
I would agree with you.
if you want to avoid influenza or probably for other factors as well. But really, the flu virus is widespread throughout the U.S. And there don't appear to be pockets that are necessarily protected. The CDC director had a press conference in the last week, and the same question was asked of her, you know, are there areas of the country that are seeing more or areas of the country that are getting a reprieve? It doesn't appear that there are protected pockets at this point. The map will show widespread activity with the exception of Oregon. Now, that state had a little bit of a surge earlier than the rest of us, and so perhaps that's an indication that the recent plateaus that we're seeing may actually play out and lead us sort of hopefully usher this flu season out.
All right. Well, listen, Doctor, if you could stick around, we have to take a quick break. But I think people would like to know what they can do, A, if they're sick or if they're not sick, how to keep themselves from getting sick and loved ones. So if we can just hang tight for just a few minutes, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Dr. Allison Galdis. She's an assistant professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and in International Medicine with the University of Minnesota Medical School.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, folks, we are talking about the flu with Dr. Allison Galdis from the University of Minnesota Medical School. Dr. Galdis, if somebody develops flu-like symptoms, what should they do? I mean, should they immediately go to their doctor?
So most people will recover from the flu simply by getting enough rest, getting enough fluids. They will certainly highly likely feel miserable during their infection, but won't necessarily need medical care. The persons who develop complications, and again, those persons are typically in the age range of 2 years and less and over the age of 65. Persons who develop complications are the ones that should really be seeking medical guidance with their doctor. And the complications that most frequently arise with influenza is just simply a very severe infection. So that would be characterized by, feeling so lethargic or not waking up or interacting, having really fast or difficult breathing, having a sort of honeymoon period, if you will, after their flu season or after their flu symptoms abate, that's followed by another bout of febrile illness because that might represent pneumonia, a bacterial infection that would be treated differently than influenza.
Well, let me ask you this, doctor, though, because, you hear some people saying, if I get any symptoms, I'm just going to run and demand that I get Tamiflu. Is that the way it works? Or is that something that's going to help or is not going to help? I mean, is that something you recommend?
The target populations for getting an antiviral certainly are those high-risk groups for experiencing complications. Data about Tamiflu in other persons is that it may curtail the duration that they're sick when taken within the first 2 days of symptoms. So there can be a benefit. I think the holy grail in the setting of influenza treatment, though, is really vaccination and prevention prior to getting infected.
Right. Well, and that's, both our United States senators proposed a bill that would increase funding for the CDC and others to do research on a universal flu vaccine. Is that something that, I mean, goodness knows, experts and scientists and research has been working on this for a long time. It just seems like this is a tough nut to crack.
It definitely is. I did hear some encouraging news from the leader of the NIH saying that we might not be far away from that possibility of a universal flu vaccine, so that we're talking about high rates of effectiveness and ideally something that might not even need to be given annually. So absolutely increased funding would assist scientists in that quest for improved protection against flu.
All right. Let me ask you this. If you haven't gotten it and your kids haven't gotten it, I mean, is there anything beyond the standbys of the disinfectant wipes and telling them to wash your hands every 5 minutes? Is that really the best thing to do?
It's one of the mainstays, certainly. If you have not gotten flu, or frankly, even if you have had flu, it's still recommended to get vaccinated if you have not been vaccinated. I mentioned that there are three subtypes of the virus that predominantly circulate. Even if you've been infected with one, you can get infected, unfortunately, with another. So vaccination, while the recent news headlines really kind of talk about the decreased effectiveness of the vaccine might not prevent you from getting the virus, but it can definitely prevent you from getting really sick from the virus.
Right. So it's still, you still should, you know, because I have not done it. And I usually do. And you see all of this, all this news about the lack of effectiveness, but every expert, that I've talked to, and I've looked at other stories that other people have done, are completely on board that this is really something that could still help.
Definitely. And also, as you mentioned, hand hygiene, cough etiquette, all those are of paramount importance. And if you do get sick, try to stay home.
I
certainly can understand the pressures of being in the workplace or, having the challenge of having an ill child and taking a day off work in order to stay home with them so that they don't go to school. But it really is critical that each of us who are sick play our part and try to reduce the spread of illness. And then those of us who have the good fortune of staying well, respect the fact that some of our colleagues might be out and they're just doing their part to reduce the spread of this influenza virus this season.
Right. And has the medical school been hit with it too?
I haven't heard of outbreaks within the medical school or the medical campus that are out of proportion to that's what's going on in other communities. Fortunately, I haven't heard of issues with critical capacity at hospitals. Hospitals, frankly, they're well prepared to go into a surge capacity mode should the need arise during respiratory season. Fortunately, I haven't heard of that arising, and as I alluded to earlier, hopefully we've reached a plateau, but if not, we can certainly, brace for ongoing activity.
All right. Well, Dr. Galdes, thank you so much. We really appreciate the information and the update on what has been a really tough flu season that has affected so many people. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
All right. It's tough. I haven't gotten it yet. And then I also feel guilty because, I nearly always make my kids get it. It's the 1 year I haven't. So far they haven't. So I'm going, I don't know. It's a tough one, but try and stay well, folks. It's so important. All right, folks. We're going to have to take a break pretty soon for some news, both national and local. And then coming up, we're going to talk in the 7 o'clock hour about a new study that says more and more young people, teens, and children even are identifying as transgender. We're going to mention that and discuss that with an expert that's coming up on News Radio 830 WCCO.